This morning, we read something that at first glance doesn't really make much sense. And in order to understand the difficulty of the question, it's good to take passages not only from this morning's Torah reading, but also a little bit from the Torah readings that follow, and to conflate them, to put them together, and hear a theme that runs throughout Devarim, throughout Deuteronomy. So I'm going to borrow from the scholar James Kugel, who puts a couple of passages together, starting with this morning's. "Behold, I set before you this day a blessing and a curse. The blessing if you obey the commandments of the Lord your God, and the curse if you do not. Today all of you stand before God, and I have set life and goodness and death and evil. I call heaven and earth today to witness life and death I'm setting before you, and blessing and curse. Choose life so that you may live." So who's going to choose the curse? Who's going to choose death? I mean, when you read it, is there anybody who isn't going to say to himself or herself, "I choose life"? But the Torah clearly assumes that some people will choose death. Otherwise, God would not have said, "Here is the stark choice. You can choose this or you can choose that." And I know implicit in this, the undercurrent, some of you are going to choose death. And in order to really understand what it means to choose life, u'bacharta b'chayim, what it means to choose blessing, to go for the bracha and not the klala, we must understand the opposite. What is it to choose the curse? And what is it to choose death? There is a clue to one of the three different answers that I'm going to offer this morning. In something that's said later in our parsha, it says, "Don't gash yourself, cut yourself, mutilate your body for the dead, for you are a child of God." What does that mean? It means when someone dies, you mourn for a fixed time, but you don't destroy your life. You don't cut yourself, which was a custom in the ancient world and in some place is a custom in the world today, because even though someone else died, you need not mutilate yourself for that death. You mourn, you're sad, but you're still alive. You must choose life. That's why there is no ancestor worship in the Jewish tradition. Why do you think it is that we don't know where Moshe is buried? Because, say the rabbis, you're not supposed to go to Moshe's grave and worship him. He was a man. And also, Moshe is dead, and we're alive. And therefore, to choose life means to understand that the loss is great, that we stand on the shoulders of our forebears, that we learn from them, that when appropriate, we revere them, but we do not let our lives be destroyed or defined by our losses, but rather by what we can still do. But there is another way, a subtler way in which people choose death. And this happens all the time, every day, at every minute, in our choices in our lives, in what we do, in whether we seize life, in whether we really live, or we cut ourselves off from influences, from ideas, from vitality, from people. In one of his long and complex novels, it's the very end of his life, Henry James wrote three novels that are called his later phase, and they're very intricate, and each sentence is long and complicated and can go on for pages, because that was his style. In fact, there's a story about Henry James. It's a great story, so I will tell you it in brackets. He was once at the theater, and he was talking to this woman, and he was going on the way he writes, which is this long, intricate sentence, and the lights were flashing, and people were going back after intermission, and she said, "You know, come on, get to the point, and he said, "Patience, madam, the predicate is coming." So his novels are like that. But in this novel, The Ambassadors, a man goes to Europe to break up a couple because it's not appropriate for them to be with each other. Parents don't like it. And the message that he learns in the middle of the novel is live all you can. It's a mistake not to. And he realizes at the end of his life that he hasn't lived. And there is a way in which we can choose death in little ways, so that when God says, those who choose the commandments choose life, the idea is you're leading a full, rich, reverent life, connections to other people and connections to God. And it would be a wonderful thing if a rabbi could wrap the sermon up right there and say, therefore, we learn that first of all, you have to mourn those who pass away, but you still must live. And second, to live vitally is to choose life. But unfortunately, as you well know, there are people in our world who literally choose death, who create a culture of death, who seek to grow martyrs from an early age, who train children that there is nothing better than to die, who oppose the culture of life, who don't grow doctors and build hospitals, but bomb them. In fact, as strange as it may seem, the Torah knew better, that there are cultures and subcultures and leaders and individuals who very deliberately and consciously and repeatedly choose death. There are people who strap bombs to themselves and walk on buses because they choose death. There are people who plan to go on airplanes and blow themselves up with as many people as they can take with them because they choose death. And they think that that's noble, and that's better, and that that is, for some insane reason, the way to live. We are not that way. And we must never be that way. V'chai bahem, our tradition teaches. You must live with the mitzvot. V'lo yamut bahem, and not die with them. So, for example, I hope that everyone here, when they see pictures of Lebanese children who have died, I hope that it pains us and that we mourn for them as well, because we believe in life and we are pained by death, by the death of people who are innocent and who are enmeshed in a culture and a circumstance that they did not choose. I hope that we don't restrict our human sympathies only to people on our own side, because we believe in life and we stand against those who see death with indifference, or worse, as something to be coveted, to be sought, to be wished for. And second, we believe in life not only in war, but in peace. That's why Rabbi Schuldenfrei and our president, Tom Flesch, are leading another mission to Israel, leaving next Sunday on the 27th and coming back Thursday, the 31st, because there is a lot of life that Israel needs to be brought to it. And all of you who can go, I hope you will go with Rabbi Schuldenfrei and with Tom Flesch and with other members of our congregation and community in partnership with Federation, that also will be taking a trip together We'll go to Israel because Bacharta Bechaim. We want to show that we're not only there when there is death, but also when you need to bring life. That people need their hands held and their hearts healed. Because we choose life and we stand against the culture of death. You will see, if you look at some of the handouts that we have outside, first of all, we've put together where the Sinai Temple Israel Crisis Funds have gone, and I say thus far, because God bless you, people are still sending us checks and we are still identifying charities in Israel that are in desperate need of help. And you will see that we give it to causes that support life, sometimes in very literal ways, like providing window shields for hospitals so that when bombs fall, windows won't shatter and patients won't be injured. Sometimes by providing soldiers with leave, sometimes by rebuilding Masorti Kehilot, conservative congregations in Israel that have been bombed and destroyed. By feeding people in soup kitchens in 100 different ways because we believe in life. And we choose blessing. And when you read the Torah portion today and you live in a world in which people actually seek to blow up airliners, I remember when I was a kid how terrible we thought that anyone would hijack an airline. Who would conceive that someone would actually seek to blow it up? We realize that that precisely which the Torah warned us against is taking hold today, which is a cult of death. And that so much of what we are and what we represent is exactly the opposite. And that we have to support that in our world. A long time ago, the philosopher Schopenhauer criticized Judaism because he said it was an optimistic religion. And you know, Schopenhauer was the philosophical pessimist, and he thought optimism was shallow and stupid. Yosef Berg, the former member of Knesset, used to say, "I'm a Jewish optimist because I know today is better than tomorrow will be." But that's not the optimism that Schopenhauer was talking about. And yet the truth is, in one way he's wrong and in one way he's right. We have been around too long and seen too much to be naive optimists. We know what evil is held in the heart of the world. We have seen it face to face, again and again. This week, I read that a marvelous novel, Suite Francaise, by Irene Nemirovsky. Only two of the projected five parts are completed. It's an amazing story. She wrote this book before she was deported to Auschwitz in 1942. And she wrote it in a little leather book in France, in very tiny handwriting, because she had to save paper. She was deported. Her husband tried to save her, but was unable to do so, and in fact, shortly after, he was deported, and they both died in Auschwitz in the same year. But their children, who were saved by their caretaker, never knew what became of their parents until the war was over. And her daughter carried around this notebook. She thought it was her mother's journal. She didn't know what it was, but she couldn't bear to read it. It was too painful. And in 1996, she finally realized that she better give it over to a war archive, otherwise it would be lost and destroyed forever. So she began to copy it out with a magnifying glass, because her mother's writing was so small, and typing it out, and she realized she was reading a masterpiece about what life was like in German occupation in France. And last year in France, it won every award that a book can win. They changed the rules of one of the awards because they thought it wasn't fair that it had been written in 1940 and 41 and it should be eligible for the prize this year. And when you look at that, you realize that this testament to life was swallowed up by the culture of death. But the Nazi regime collapsed. And the book endures. That's what we believe. And that's why, even when we say that we know the darkness at the heart of the world, Schopenhauer was in one way correct. Judaism is ultimately an optimistic religion because we believe in redemption. Because we know that there is darkness, but we don't think that ultimately night will swallow day. Because we remember the Midrash, the rabbinic story that when Adam first saw the sun go down, he thought the world was over. And God told him, take two stones. The stones were called Afelah and Mavet, darkness and death. He said, strike them together and you will get a spark that will light up the night. Because even in darkness and death, we believe in light. So what is it we hope for? If we were a culture of death, I'll tell you what we would ultimately hope for. The destruction of our enemies. That would be the summit of our wishes. Let them die. But remember, we take a drop from the cup at Pesach because we don't wish for death. We wish for peace. We wish for calm. We wish for goodness. We wish for life. And so this morning, in the Haftarah, Isaiah speaks two lines. And when Maimonides, when Rambam, when the greatest philosopher of our history, wanted to end his giant code of law, Mishneh Torah, he chose these two lines to express what the Messianic age would be like. It doesn't say one day Judaism will conquer the world, or one day all of our enemies will die. This is how the Rambam ended the Mishneh Torah, his code of law. V'chol banayach limudei Adonai v'rav shalom banayach. And all God's children will be learned in the ways of the Lord. And great will be the peace of God's children. In the end, even in a culture of death, u'bacharta v'chayim, we, the Jewish people, choose life. Every day, each day, here, around the world, and in Eretz Yisrael. And we pray, Kol banayach limudei Adonai v'rav shalom banayach, that one day, everyone will know of God, and there will be peace. Shabbat shalom.